Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome, everyone. Another Baseball America Podcast, playoff podcast. We put one out yesterday, and now we're rolling. The playoffs are rolling, and so are we. We thank you. We hope you enjoy this month of weekday daily podcast. Sorry, guys. I'm not on Saturday morning. I'm not gathering you guys together so that, you know, we can podcast. But we thank you for the download. We thank you for tuning in. We want to remind you that our podcast is sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP, that's B-A-S-H-I-P, to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. Well, guys, that was kind of crazy last night.
You know, four-hour game, a lot of home runs, and welcome to baseball in 2017.
That first inning was insane. I mean, that first inning was. I don't know if it's everything you. No, I don't. I mean, I don't think it's everything you expected. It was everything, but it was. It was obviously a lot of home runs. It was a lot of managerial decisions. It was an intense way to start. An intense month.
It was a really good baseball game, JJ. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it was. It was a one-game elimination game, so there were high stakes. It was a good baseball game. There were home runs. There were guys throwing 97 miles an hour, guys throwing 100. There were also some good base running plays. There was great defense. It was a good baseball game. I think baseball Twitter overanalyzes everything and overdissects everything.
No doubt.
And it's like, oh, this is three true outcomes baseball. It wasn't just three true outcomes baseball. There was some of that, but there were some other things. Yeah, there was only one or two stolen bases, I guess. Bucks had stolen base and came out. But there's a lot of elements of baseball. It was certainly in the trend of today's baseball, but it wasn't like the ultimate example of three true outcomes baseball. I'm sorry. I'm being reactionary to Twitter, but I thought baseball Twitter went a little overboard last night and it didn't feel like a 4-hour game to me until later in the game. The first inning took a long time, but a lot of stuff happened in the first inning as well. It wasn't a boring inning.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, I always go back to, I watched when I was a freshman in college, it was a UConn North Carolina football game where that was a boring, terrible, awful, no good college football game. And the first quarter took 58 minutes and nothing happened. It was just penalties and bad play. That wasn't the first inning of the major league game. It was good play. It was a lot of stuff happened. There was a pitching change and there was a lot of action. That's why it took so long. But. I thought it was good baseball. I just thought it was a really good baseball game with a lot on the line and a great Yankee Stadium crowd that made it exciting to watch.
The energy was impressive, and I did think it was interesting seeing how the game, you know, shifted a little bit. You talk about baseball Twitter, you know, overreactionary to three true outcomes, and I think it was interesting because early there was a little bit of that. I think I pointed out that at the top, I think of the first 26 batters, half was either home run, walk, or strikeout. But as the game went on, because that was only through essentially the second or third inning with how many guys were coming to the plate, we saw great defense, we saw base running plays. You mentioned stolen bases, but even just Byron Buxton beating out potential double play ball, we definitely saw some good things. Then, of course, they had Zach Granite missing first base. I feel so bad for that kid.
That was one of the most random things ever.
Staten Island, hometown, he's in a playoff game, his first one. And he's going to be remembered for that. I just feel bad for the kid.
The thing I loved about that was that he was trying to, like, he was trying to subtly, like, return, like, oh, I'm just heading back to the, oh, and, you know, there's not a, I mean, the thing about it is credit, you know, everyone kind of realized it. But that was kind of fun from that standpoint.
Like, a nice play by Starlin Castro.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
To play and just be alert. So I'm sure he hasn't seen a lot of times where that guy stepped right over first base. He probably doesn't see that either because he's seen a lot more baseball than I have. He's on the field, but he probably hasn't seen that either because that seems like an exceedingly rare play. You know, so we had a little bit of everything.
One thing that I thought baseball Twitter was definitely overanalyzing, and I wanted to kind of scream through social media, and I chose not to, wisely, I think. It's never a good idea to scream through social media.
Yes.
Is everyone's like, oh, it's a bullpenning game. It's a bullpenning game. No, a bullpenning game is when both starters are doing okay through five innings, and then you say, you know what? Normally we might let these guys go, but we're going to bring in the power arms. This is, your starters got blown up early. That happens. That's not a bullpenning game. It's, hey, our starters got blown up. We have to pull them because this isn't working. Let's bring in the depth.
No, that's a natural progression. I would disagree.
That's baseball for the last 20 years.
That's just 2017. I agree. That was 2017. In 2001, there is no way that the Yankees would have treated that. I know it's a one game.
I completely disagree. But they would have. There was no one game.
But I'm saying if it's a one game playoff, what it would have normally happened then it would have been who is your next best starter? You're like, who is the, because you have another starter you can bring in that game. And it would have been in 1999, it would have been, we're going to go to our other starter. We're going to do like the Twins did, where you say, okay, our starter we have doesn't have it tonight. So we're going to go, we've got these other starters who could go tonight, and he could give
Yankees,
us five innings.
The Yankees really don't have another young pitcher to go to in that situation who they feel like they could go to in the middle of an inning. I would say, first of all, no one, even in 2000 or 1995, would have gone to a starter in mid-inning.
You would bring in a reliever. I'm saying it would have been the next inning.
In mid-inning. Well, you probably wouldn't have because he struck out the first two guys, Chad Green did. I love reading our Chad Green scouting report out of Louisville where it's like, heavy sinker, not a strikeout guy, downhill angle. It's like, this guy's figured something out. The Yankees clearly have figured something out. So another nice development story for the Yankees. But maybe, so I think the difference would have been, instead of David Robertson coming in the fourth inning, he would have had someone else come in. That's where your starter would have come in. But I think that, again, the Twins did it in, I don't think it was out of the norm for the Twins. In when they almost pulled Santana in the middle inning, they had two guys up, Buzanitz to come in, whose name apparently is funny to Jeff Passan, who's done a lot of great reporting, but I mean, like, it's just, you know, like, baseball Twitter got to me last night. But if they had to go in the middle of the inning, they would have gone to Alan Buzanitz. Mm-hmm. When they had a clean inning, they went to the starter. Mm-hmm. That is more traditional, but the Yankees, the untraditional part of it, and the reason that I tend to be more on the spectrum toward Kyle's side is the difference is the way the Yankees team is built is bullpen first. And so that is because they're built bullpen first, and because they have basically six guys who could close, one of whom they decided not to use last night, that's why they could go that route. But if they felt like any of their other starters were better than David Robertson or Tommy Canley, they would have used them. But I don't think they feel like any of the other starters, not in their usual routine, is better than those bullpen guys. That's the difference.
And that's what I'm saying.
It's a subtle difference. It's not a radical Brian Kenny used, in my mind, it's not.
And again, I think that what you have now is teams have realized the way to win in the playoffs is to construct the team like you just said, which is we're going to have six guys who...
I think that's incorrect. That's the first game with six guys. The Indians didn't do it that way.
No, they used three
guys, and they only did it because they didn't have enough healthy starters. And this year, with most of the same bullpen guys back, they will not do it because their starting pitching is that good. So I think the Yankees are the anomaly, not the trend, because even the Royals, they had still needed starters to get them 5-6 innings. JJ, they had the last three innings with 1-1-1. I think the Yankees, and I also think a one game you can do it. I don't think it's sustainable over the grind of the whole month of October. And the Indians showed us that last year. They nearly pulled it off, but in game seven, the guys were exhausted. They were. Andrew Miller wasn't as good. And Aroldis Chapman wasn't as good three times in 4 days. So you can't use a relief pitcher the way the Yankees used them last night over the course of the whole month of October. I don't think that's been proven yet. And so I think the Yankees are the anomaly.
When you say that's been proven yet, no one's saying that you're going to use, you cannot use the way the Yankees used their bullpen last night. You cannot say that is our plan for October. If you do, you will go home. Absolutely. However, what it is that it is something where when you have you are now, again, there are more off days now. It is something where I do believe when we look back on this October before it ever starts, we're going to see it is going to be a lot of four innings, you know, two times through the lineup at max for a lot of starters, and it is going more and more.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But last night was just failed starters like Kyle said.
Right. That's my issue. I think people were trying to use like as a C thing. No, that's not what this was. Josh Tomlin pitching well through four, getting pulled after 4 2/3 in the World Series last year. That is, you know, bullpenning.
I know it was a bad starter, but at the same time, you having Chad Green, one of your best relievers, come into the first inning and then get you to the fourth.
But that's bullpenning.
But no,
it's using your best pitchers, which is who the Twins. But that's part of bullpenning. The Twins' best pitcher were Jose Barrett.
If he had started, I'd agree with you, but he didn't. So when a team just does that, when they just do away with the idea of a starting pitcher and routines, I would say the revolution's upon us. But last night, they pulled Luis Severino because Luis Severino stunk. But Luis Severino, I still think, is their best pitcher. He just didn't have it last night. The moment was too big for Luis Severino. So they had to go to plan B. But to me, bullpenning is when that's plan A. I don't think we're there yet.
Do I think the other part of it is when you said, and like to me, I guess we're talking about different definitions. The thing that I thought that the Yankees did really well last night, what Joe Girardi did really well, which is new, which is not something that we used to see. And I know it's a one game, which makes it a little different, but Joe Girardi just basically went out there and said, okay, we're going to try to win the first. We're going to try to win the second. We will figure out. And I know he has a massive bullpen that allows him to do it, but he went with two of their best pitchers to get them to the sixth. And two of their best relievers to get them to the sixth. And then the reality is what we saw, which is very smart about doing that, is that do it, use those guys when the game is close, because you do not know. They had a lot more leeway to use. If they needed to use Betances last night, who's been shakier, they could have used him in the eighth, because the great thing at that point for the Yankees is they had some room.
Well, that's where, look, the best teams are the teams that are deep all around. Deep rotations, deep bullpens, deep lineups, and the Yankees' bullpen depth helped them out. You see a team that falls down early, their starting pitcher's out of it, they have this offense where, hey, 3 runs in the first inning, that's not a problem for them. And you have this really good group of relievers you can roll out. And I think, to me, that's more about the way the Yankees are built. They play to their strength. It's not about some grand scheme that's a dictum on all of Major League Baseball. It's a team that played to its strengths and did it well, and that's a credit to their manager. And
to Brian Cashman for building the bullpen. You know, yeah. To me, like, they had a strong bullpen, and then he went and added to it.
He doubled
Robertson
down on it. Yeah.
And Tommy Canley during the year. Robertson was the hero. Green was really good.
Robertson's
the one who got 10 outs. And David Robertson, to me, it is a fascinating career. I resisted the urge last time. I tweeted something about Kyle Snyder getting promoted to be the Rays Major League pitching coach. And because a lot of people follow me who are North Carolina baseball fans, because I'm down here and do their games. So I added the Diamond Heels part. So Chad Flack retweeted it. Well, Chad Flack was North Carolina's first baseman who hit a game-winning walk-off home run off David Robertson in 2006 to get North Carolina the Cal Poly Series. Chad Flack, who had 3 chances to be drafted, was never drafted. David Robertson, who was a 17th-round pick as an eligible sophomore, has had this very long career with the Yankees. I remember putting him in the handbook that first year because people liked him. I like David Robertson. I've always followed his career. He's a great example of player development has to continue in the major leagues, even as an older player with this addition of just much more reliance on the curveball. He was a curveball guy in college. Then he got to the Yankees, got to the big leagues, and started throwing a lot of cutters. So he became kind of like a fastball cutter and then curveball. Now he's kind of back to what he was. And I almost tweeted at Chad Flack last night, like, hey, you still think you could get Robertson? Maybe if he gave you the Beezer bats from 2006, maybe you could take him oppo right center field like he did back then. But he was unhittable last night. And again, that's the kind of guy he was in college. He was this fireman kind of reliever. You want 10 outs? I can get you 10 outs. You want 3? I'll get you 3 and come back the next day. So, again,
Which is useful because he's done this before.
And that's the part that's the most interesting to me. I'm less interested. It's interesting. I think it's almost a little bit of branding for Brian Kenny to have the bullpenning thing. And that's why I'm a little reactionary to it. I just think we're in this period where relievers and starters are there's a convergence of what's expected. I do think we're getting away from this Tony La Russa-ization of bullpens, which the ultimate example really was the Royals in 2015. One inning, every night. Well, you're going to get Kelvin Herrera, you're going to get...
But it wasn't one. It was one. It was basically, it was smart that they did. It was 1-2-1, and they would rotate around which one you got two from.
Well, that, and then also, you know, I always liked, again...
I actually think that's better. When I think Tony La Russa, I think it's the one batter situation. All right, we're going to bring in Luther Hackman for this batter. Right. Then we're going to bring in Randy Flores for this batter. That was the worst. To me, guys like, you know, hey...
It was the worst.
Hey, go in and take, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th. To me, that's fun. That's great. The guys that can go 2+ innings, that's awesome. More power to him. Having those multi-inning guys is huge.
Right. But I think we're going back to that, kind of more of a relief pit where relief pitchers go through a lineup once, just like a starter might be asked to go through it twice, and that's it.
How many starters are there in these playoffs that you really think teams are going to want to have them go through a lineup 3 times? I mean, I can count them on one hand, I think.
No, you can't. The 3 on the Nationals.
I think very few, especially now Scherzer with his hammy.
Let's go through it.
The only way they win, JJ. And I think that that's most of the Cubs starters as well, because their bullpen's okay, but it's not shut down. But I still think that's the way the Cubs go to the World Series or repeat as World Series champions, is if Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, and either Lackey or, the injured Arrieta, if those guys go through a lineup two to three times in the case. Lester and Quintana, I think they're going to be three. I really do.
As good as the Indians' bullpen is, Kluber and Carrasco are going to be given every, if they're cruising, they're going to let them pitch.
Or Bauer. I mean, I think they're going to do the same thing with Trevor Bauer. Come get the ball off from Trevor Bauer.
Diamondbacks, Robbie Ray, Zach Greinke, go through the Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw. We'll see.
I think the Dodgers is one guy, but the Red Sox are probably two.
My prediction is that most of the pitchers you named are going to average less than 25 batters faced per.
You may be right, but I still think that's not what, I don't think it's one hand. I still think, to me, like Scherzer, Verlander, Keuchel, Chris Sale, we're naming at least one or two for most of the best teams.
I think that most of them are going to top out at about 25 to 20. I think it's going to be crazy this year. I could be wrong. I think that we are seeing the Astros approach all year, even with Keuchel, you know, and all.
Astros didn't have Verlander most of the year, and Keuchel was hurt. No one else qualified for the ERA title for the Astros.
But even if 25 batters, if you're pitching decently well, that'll still get you through 6 1/3. Obviously, if you're perfect, that's 8 innings, but 8 1/3, right. It's not going to be up. But even, if you're pitching well, that's still 6 1/3, 6 2/3, which is still a perfectly respectable start. I think that's a fine number. I'm talking about more of the people who seem to think, oh, we're going to see these 4 4 2/3 inning type starts. Again, it's going to come down to, depending on whether it's game 2 or game 6 is going to make a huge difference there. And also, it's just the strength of the team. Pitching to a team's strength, I think people want to throw this enormous blanket over what every major league team is going to do, when in reality, the managers know their bullpens, know their rotations, and it's just going to be a really team-by-team basis. What worked for the Yankees, if the Twins went to their bullpen right away, it would have been even worse blowout, because they don't have the bullpen arms. Their best pitchers, their best options were the starters.
I'm in between you guys. I think the trend is going that direction, but I don't think it gives the starting pitchers enough credit. Maybe I'm not giving the offenses enough credit. But I do think that major league teams, to sustain this, I know there are more days off, but to not burn out their relief pitchers, they still want 5, 6, and if they can get 7 innings out of a Corey Kluber, out of a Chris Sale, but no one expects even their aces to go 9 anymore. But that hasn't been true for a long time.
I just think
it's gradual. I don't think this is the revolution. I think this is.
You're right. I think you look at it and you say right now, if you look back over the last 3, 4, 5 years, very few pitchers in the postseason are seeing any batter a fourth time. And they're not usually seeing every batter 3 times. That's just the norm now. But I do think the reality of it is that we also are at the point now, as you said, Brian Cashman wisely doubled down on adding more arms. You look at what the Astros did. Yeah, they got Verlander, but they also, what it allowed them also to do is Joe Musgrove reliever is actually a pretty useful pitcher.
Joe Musgrove reliever was a failed starter. That's right. Not revolutionary.
But no. But what I'm saying is that their bullpen now is something where, again, they bulked it up.
They bulked it up because their starting pitching failed, JJ. They did not prioritize the bullpen the way the Yankees did. They're not in the same boat.
No.
They did not want to pay the price for Justin Verlander. They had that offer in July, and the Tigers insisted, no, you're going to give us Rodgers, Cam, this is what we want. And the Astros said no. They tried to go the bullpen route. They faltered throughout August, and then they had to go the starting route. They had to go get an ace. So I think they actually they're actually counter to the trend. They wanted to go the route you're talking about, and their bullpen wasn't good enough, even with Musgrove moved to the bullpen. So they needed Justin Verlander. I think they realized, we can't go through October and win the championship, win a World Series, just bullpenning. We're not good enough.
Our starting
and our relieving. So the Yankees, I don't think, would have been in this position either if their starting pitching didn't have Severino. So again, we're not televising the revolution yet. What happened last night for me was failed starting, but the Yankees were uniquely qualified to bullpen the game which is what Brian wanted them to do.
As soon as it got tied, as soon as it was tied at the end of the first, and it's like, okay, at this point where you look at it and you say, the twin starter doesn't have it either, you knew massive advantage for the Yankees because, as you said, the Twins, who, let's be honest, the Twins who were trading away relievers, right, you know, during the season because they understandably didn't think they were going to be here.
Yeah.
So Trevor Hildenberger, Alan Busenitz, like these are not guys that you say, yes, carry us to glory.
But before we wrap up tonight.
Yeah, we need to talk more about tonight.
Yeah. tonight. You know, what do y'all think? What do you think happens?
I am going to go Diamondbacks. I just think that, you know, the Rockies are a really good team at the end of the day. Like I talked about yesterday, where I felt like the Twins, even if they could hang on as they did, the Yankees just had too much to come at them again and again and again and again. Now, I think the Diamondbacks-Rockies is a much more equitable matchup, but at the same time, I just see that Diamondbacks lineup. And even though Goldschmidt, you know, struggled in September, trying to go through Lamb, Goldschmidt, Pollock, oh, by the way, J.D. Martinez, all the way, I mean, up and down that entire lineup, the Rockies' bullpen has been shaky times. I think John Gray will do fine, but once you start getting into some of those later inning guys, eventually I do expect the Diamondbacks to pull away, even if Gray hangs with Greinke for the first four or five innings.
See, I don't think it's an equitable matchup at all. I don't think the Rockies have been good for a couple months. They're two-man offense.
That, the crazy Blackman. Thing is that they're...
Parker got, he picked it up a little bit at the end.
But their lineup...
But their lineup,
it does not... That is the thing that stands out, is that the Colorado Rockies...
In my mind, the Rockies were the worst playoff team. The Twins were better. The Rockies...
Ooh, I would disagree there, but okay.
Talent-wise, I don't think it's close. The Rockies have two stars, and they have really interesting young pitching. But in terms of the lineup, 1-9, it's not close. The Twins lineup is far superior to the Rockies, especially if they had Sano. I would love to see what Al Rey would do in Yankee Stadium for the whole year. Come on. I mean, like, he weighs as much as Judge, and he's scrunched down 4 inches.
Both agree it's Diamondbacks.
But I'm just saying, but John Gray has to be the equalizer. So to me, the way the Rockies win is John Gray has to go old school. You know, there's a reason John Gray was the number one guy on our BA 500 in 2013. He has a wicked slider and he throws the snot out of the fastball. He's going to have, like, what, he had a 17 strikeout game last year in September. He's going to have to reach back and have an old school, old baseball, classic September, October moment for the Rockies to win. And it's not an easy lineup for him to do it against. But I just think the Rockies were the weakest team to make the playoffs. And if you're the Dodgers, you're rooting like hell for John Gray tonight because the Diamondbacks are a much tougher matchup for them.
The Diamondbacks are every bit...
93-win team.
I was going to say, they are very much... You're right. There is a distinction here. One of these is a wild card team. And that's fine. They're a playoff team. Yeah. But they are a wild card team with the flaws that you would expect. And then you have this other team that, to be honest, matches up. Like, you look at them and say, no, that's... They are every bit as good as these other teams we're talking about.
I do think the Rockies are really a fun roster because how often do teams make the playoffs basically based off of all homegrown, just about all homegrown, mostly first and second year starting pitchers, and then you throw in that it's the Rockies doing this? It's a tremendous success story in my mind for Bill Schmidt and Damon Iannelli and Jay Matthews and the scouting department and the player development staff with the Rockies.
And
those guys, I mean, this is just an
And they flipped a switch because it used to be that they could not develop homegrown pitching.
Correct. And they...
Well, no, I should say domestic homegrown
right,
pitching.
Right. And that's exactly right. So that's a great point. And B, I think, you know, Jeff Breidich and Zach Wilson in the front office deserve credit. They flipped the switch and they stopped trying to gimmick things. Tracy Ringelby wrote about it in our prospect handbook. He stopped trying to be gimmicky and just said, look, go pitch. Pitch to your strengths. And it's worked. It's worked for I'm already blank on his name.
Chatwood.
Vegas kid. No, the lefty.
Tyler
Anderson.
Who, by the way, you know, got bumped down to the bullpen at the end. I mean, he had a real nice year, but Marquez, Freeland, Chatwood, Sensatella.
Herman Marquez was a super trade from the Rays. Again,
Corey Dickerson.
Yeah, I mean, like, Corey Dickerson's a nice player, but Herman Marquez is harder to find than Corey Dickerson. I love Corey Dickerson, but easier to find a corner outfielder who can hit than it is to find a starter. And Kyle Freeland, John Gray. So I love this Rockies team, But it's a little bit shocking that they made the playoffs in this manner and that their lineup is so thin. I mean, they could have been like a 95-win team if a couple of guys had decent offensive seasons, but they get...
We're looking at you, Carlos Gonzalez.
They get nothing in the middle of the infield offensively. They get the emptiest batting average from DJ LeMahieu in the game. They get only home runs from Trevor Story. And Carlos Gonzalez, the worst free agent push that I can remember in years. It's just
Carlos gross. Gomez has a word for you, because that's
true. The good news is Luke Roy stepped up after he got traded.
Yes.
He's been a nice addition. I also want to say for the Rockies, feel good for Bud Black. I mean, this is a guy who managed two big collapses with the Padres, 2007, 2010. And look, it wasn't his fault. 2007, Milton Bradley went crazy, and he had to just restrain him, and then he rips his knee up, and all of a sudden the Padres is, you know, it's not...
Hey, that's ancient history.
I mean, you know, 2010, it's not his fault that Matt Latos and some of the young guys just ran out of gas there. I mean, I think it's a situation where he, you know, always was a class act, a good manager, limited stuff to work with.
He was a key setup reliever for my 1986 retro fantasy team, setting up Lance McCullers Sr., that was a lot of fun. I had a soft spot for Bud Black, thanks to that.
Yeah, you know, and he came in this year with a young staff and was able to, you know, I went up and spoke with some of the young pitchers when the Rockies were in Philadelphia back in May, and they talked about just having him, and, you know, he was really able to get through to them on how to be successful, and that's been the backbone of the team, as we talked about, that pitching staff. So
yeah, they're fun. They're a fun team. I mean, I'm not saying that the Diamondbacks aren't fun, but I have a hard time getting past the Diamondback uniforms. I mean, I just do.
The Diamondbacks.
They're like a travel ball team.
Those are horrendous. So we picked the Diamondbacks, JJ?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Diamondbacks. I mean, again, just not the, again, and I go back to what I said last night. That means I think this is like 60% Diamondbacks, 40% Rockies. There's very few cases where I'll ever go much beyond 65%, 35%, because it's
for
a baseball game.
Playoff.
It's a one-game playoff, and John Gray can be really good. And so.
Well, how about the format, you guys? I mean, like, that's the other thing we haven't talked about. I mean, like, I love the current playoff format. We should bring Ted Cahill in here to be
He hates it. He hates it. But
say with the passion of a thousand white hot suns, but I don't think Teddy has that kind of passion.
No, that's not his MO.
Yeah,
but
his walk up music is not REM talk about the passion. That will never be his walk up music.
Again, the thing we've talked about, we talked about it on the podcast yesterday, I believe, that we just said, like, look, you're right. It is not a equitable way to determine, you know, one game. But the reality is a 7-game series does not determine who is the better team. There is, you know, some arbitrariness to it. But it comes back to, you are a wild card. And if I am, last night it was ESPN or tonight it's TBS, I want it to be a one game. I do not, the excitement TV-wise, which this is a product, this is an entertainment product, the product of that one game series is vastly superior to if you say it's a best of three, one team wins the first one and they jump out to an early lead in the second game, not the same atmosphere.
The way I view it, if you're going to do it this way with the two wild cards, it has to be a one game playoff. It has to be that, or we're going back to only one wild card team, everyone plays in the division. I don't think you can take this current format and expand it to three games. If you accept we're going to have the fifth playoff team, you have to do it this way.
The most equitable way you could do this is say there's one champion. The AL is going to play every, you know, we got to go to 32 teams, but the AL is going to play everyone in the AL balanced, and NL is going to play everyone in the NL balanced, and we'll have the AL champ versus the NL champ, and that's it, because that is the most fair way. You get 162 games, and there is consequences to it. We're never going back to that. With that being said, I don't mind it being a really good entertainment product.
Yeah, I don't get the outrage. I really don't. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that this sense of fairness and equity. It's a baseball game. This is not, you know, we're not talking about hurricane relief here. Everything doesn't have to be fair in determining a baseball championship. Get on the field, play the game. Everyone on both sides knew the rules. The Twins and Yankees set up their rosters for one game, and it made for a fun game. And I think we'll see a fun game potentially as well. But I mean, really, the pressure to me for a fun game tonight with Colorado and Arizona goes to John Gray. But there is a little rivalry between those two organizations. They share spring training.
Complex.
They're both in the kind of same general geographic vicinity. They're expansion teams within 5 years of each other, both in that division. I expect that to get kind of
2007 NLCS, Rockies Diamondbacks.
Right. So, I mean, like, back 10 years ago, there was some, it got heated between those two organizations.
There was a slide, Stephen Drew at shortstop. There was, I feel like there was a controversial slide there. None of those guys are still around, but.
I just remember Tracy Ringleby writing about it, and he had choice words for the then Diamondbacks front office. But the Diamondbacks, that's like five Diamondbacks front offices ago. So,
yeah.
So they are contrasting owners as well because of the stability you've seen in Colorado. And that you don't see in Arizona. So should be a fun game, but I mean, I think it's got a lot to live up to be as good as last night's game because there's just something different about being in the Boogie Down and Aaron Judge and Byron Buxton. There's no Byron Buxton on either of these two teams. So let's hope that either Goldschmidt or JD Martinez does something exceptional because JD.
Think we can see some bombs.
JJ loves JD.
I do. I do think we need to wrap this up. We've gone 30 minutes. If we do this every day, we're going to be.
It was par for the course.
It was fun. It was par for the course. We do want to thank you for listening. We do want to thank you for the download. Thank you for subscribing, whether it's iTunes or your favorite podcast catcher. And today's podcast was sponsored by Baseballism. Don't forget to shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP, that's BASHIP, to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. For John, for Kyle, I'm JJ. We thank you. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.